You may be right, and welcome to The Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and beside me is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Well, have you bought your local drugs lately? Are you all fixed up? Did you get your prescription? Can you afford them? Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit. And Texas. In Texas, they conducted a drawing contest on who could do the most appropriate or interesting drawing of the prophet Muhammad. Under their Islamic law, you're not allowed to do that. No images of Muhammad. And in fact, the Islamic faith basically rules and roils against. We having a problem with this mic. It seemed that this mic was a problem. In any event, the freedom of expression that's lacking in the Islamic faith is such that they're willing to kill for it, as we saw with, in France, where they went in and shot the hell out of the publishers in the newspaper.
Charlie Hebdo.
But now we have it showing up here, and it was a challenge by a conservative group in Garland, Texas, to that very issue. But if you think it just happens there, you're wrong. It happens right here in Florida. In fact, it happened to me personally. I was working at a retreat center, a large one, on the Braden River. I won't name it right now. It's run by the Episcopacy of the Episcopal Church. And so happens I was doing a thing called The Art of Politics, which is all about political cartooning, of which I'm fairly experienced at. I was offered a job at the New York Times to do illustration for them because of some of my cartoons. I didn't choose to go to New York, but I was offered a job there over the quality of the work. In any event...
And you worked for the Pelican Press, too, didn't you?
I worked 3 years for the Pelican Press. I worked for the Venice Gondolier. I did cartooning there a couple of years. But the long and the short of it, Pelican Press in those days was much different than it is now. Nothing more than an advertisement rag for real estate.
We're going to transfer this other mic here to Augie, because right now the volume seems to be low. I'm looking at the waveforms right here, a little technical aspect of my job on the Morning Edge. So Augie's going to change his other mic.
Are we any better now?
No, for some reason my voice comes out much louder than your voice, and I'm not sure why
mic.
That is.
That would be the better solution.
Well, we're going to put these two mics together right here and have you do a double mic.
Is that any better?
We're going to try that.
Does that work any better?
You're coming out better there. There you go.
Okay. In any event, I was doing this course, and I brought up the issue of religion and what people choose to believe and want to believe. And I've had some serious questions that if people are of real faith, they you should accept the teachings of the particular prophet at the on the face value of how it applies in their time and in their future. And of course, I said at the time, in that particular circumstance, that what if they determined that Christ had not been killed on the cross, did not die on the cross, that his death was staged, and that he was not on a crucifix of the cross variety, which, according to Roman law, is the case. The cross was really a T, and they hung them on it. They tied them to a bar and made them drag the bar to their crucifixion place. The other question is whether he was crucified or put on a cross or put on a T in Golgotha, or was he really put on in the Garden of Gethsemane? And I'm into religion now and some of this stuff. But all that being said, I said, do you really have faith? If you don't just accept the teaching, you need to make the guy God. If you need to make him God, you really don't have a serious idea about religion. You don't have a strong faith in the teaching and the quality of love one another, which is supposedly that. Well, anyway, I said, so if we did a cartoon in that, you'd have Christ talking to Magdalene on the side of the tomb, and of course, she did go there. And she found Christ on the side of the tomb. And then Christ showed up at Emmaus, and she was there also. So you had to wonder about the death issue. But you didn't have to wonder about the teaching of Jesus and what that would follow on that whole score. So that was the nature of what I said, show the illustration, have the conversation in a bubble form above their heads. Well, the next day, after doing this one-day discourse, and the people were very interested, we had about 65 students in there, many of them from out of state, it was Elder Hostel. the third year I've been doing it, very popular course. Here comes the bishop of the episcopacy, a woman. By goodness, we know gender solves all the answers. And she sits there, and then I get noticed after that class that I will not have my contract renewed. I said, so have I become suddenly unpopular? Because my first class had 20 people, now we have 60 and 70. She said, no, you were more popular than ever. But the powers that be decided they don't want you back. And this is what goes on. It passes for censorship within religions that extends itself into small and larger ways. And in the case of Texas, people get shot, and the people invading, the Islamists who invaded in the drawing contest down in Garland, Texas, ended up dead. A couple of the security people got shot. Now, they did it to provoke. But provoking thought isn't such a bad thing, folks. It just isn't. In any case, we have that problem in this country. Intolerance shows its ugly head all the time. And then speaking of that...
Let's talk about that for a second,
sure.
The provoking. You're not supposed to be able to call, shout out fire in the theater. And there's one element...
Wait a minute, let me stop you right there. Calling fire in the theater is saying, hey folks, it only looks like fire, so don't run. Or, yeah, it is fire, and run. What do you do? I mean, this has got nothing to do with censorship.
No, I understand that. And I'm kind of struggling with this myself. But one of the issues I've heard people say is that you're not supposed to have speech that will cause a threat to society. And we have in Manatee County a guy named Terry Jones who burned the Koran, and specifically to inflame and create possibly a threatening situation that may be harmful to other people. Now, I agree with some of Terry Jones's philosophy that we do see some radical Muslims that are indeed killing people because of cartoons, because of different expressions, because they're Christians, because they're a different religion. And that's the only reason. They don't need much of a religion to become martyrs, to become killers, to become terrorists. And I think Terry Jones has that part right, to label the whole 1.3 billion people as all terrorists. It's a different situation. But the question that some people in America are asking, if you do something that will inspire and create a threatening situation, should that be legal? Should that be permitted if you know that there's a likelihood that you're going to cause violence by that free speech?
The First Amendment speaks to that pretty clearly. You may not like the speech, but you got to permit it.
Well, not in the case of yelling fire in a crowded theater that could cause...
Because your fire is... I mean, there's really a problem there. I mean, we're going to go into the First Amendment and deny people the right to speak. And, of course, on this show, we have the issue of speech as well, and people call in. On Monday, I talked to Neil and talked about Neil in terms of the poverty issues and what Neil was concerned what to do. And I have to apologize to him because I went a little bit too much into an interview that touched on his personal life.
You're going to talk on the topic? Okay. We have a caller who's going to talk on the topic. So welcome to the Morning Edge. And what do you have to say about this topic this morning?
Well, good morning, August, and good morning, Floyd J. I find it interesting that you're talking on the topic of censorship. Is that not correct?
That's where I'm coming from.
Absolutely. You're on target.
All right. So I just want to make sure that I'm on topic as requested.
Thank you. Censorship. I appreciate that.
And I was wondering, how do you square the scenario of whenever I typically would call in and take a counterpoint of view that I feel that I am being censored by being hung up upon and then given the excuse of why I have been hung up upon having a different point of view, but
actually,
feeling that I have been censored. Can you relate to that?
I'm the person who does the hanging up, so let me start first. I love to have good discussions. I think we learn. Lawrence, you have things that come from a different point that I can learn from. Hopefully I do as well. Our country will grow from that discussion and see what may have the best merit. What I won't tolerate is basically seventh grade belittling of each other in insults. I want to see a good conversation. And when it starts to become just insulting and ragging and non-constructive, yes, I won't be in a show like that. So, Lawrence, weigh in on your conversation that we have right now.
Let me speak to this at this point. We have a fundamental disagreement to some extent. I think that when you're making your point of disagreement, that's one thing, Lawrence. But the problem we run into once in a while is we try to have a conversation, you and I and Floyd, and being the host of the show. It is really, I mean, I do the cut line on my throat, and that means that let's end this conversation and come
right,
to the end.
Right.
So
right.
The long and the short of it, you called, I think it was...
You're giving the reasons why you censor, August.
No, but I'm not. You're not listening.
Yes, I am. I'm listening to every word with bated breath.
Excuse me. I'm saying I'm less likely to cut anyone off under any circumstance, and so... Floyd does do the board. And
I do. That's
and,
me.
And it's his, it was his decision to cut you off on that particular
right.
But
okay.
not to
it
censor your
who's
ideas.
Doing it. You're doing it.
Not to censor your ideas, Lawrence. But to
oh,
censor,
it's the ideas. Oh, okay.
No, not to censor your thoughts, not to censor your
wait,
ideas
don't
your expressions.
Oh, okay. All right. You just sound very defensive, but that's okay.
Not
move on.
Okay,
here's
good.
Here's where we have a problem right now. I think that... when you're calling names, and that's probably the ad hominem tack, then we get into a
like
problem.
Governor Goofy yesterday, the other day.
Governor Goofy and Gee Whiz and
is that name calling? I'm only mirroring your bad behavior.
Well, what I'm simply saying to you is, I'm not talking to you and saying this is the one thing I don't really approve of here on the station. That you've gotten the label of the bad Lawrence and the good Lawrence is someone else. that's ad hominem with the caller and the host, and I think that's what's wrong. So we're discussing a problem within the show in that regard. So, but if you're going to talk about something beyond whether your tennis balls got soaked at the courts the other day,
right? Yeah, you got that one, huh? Egg all over your face there, August.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
So what is the issue?
Censorship, remember?
Censorship, right. Denial of the right to speak, correct? The right to speak.
I would agree with Floyd J. that there should be and could be, as there is all over the country with me, civil discourse. But it appears that your show, particular, has a difficult time when I point out the hypocrisies, like censorship, that I've been talking about.
Well, no, again, we disagree. I have never censored you. I simply do not like to have the insults.
That's why you censor me.
No, it's not censorship. There's a difference
between
insults and conversation.
A subtle.
Well, Lawrence, so you don't feel like you're the arbiter here. You're really not.
I know.
I want to hear your ideas, and when we get past the ad hominem, we can maybe do that. I think.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to point out that you were pointing out the gross censorship going on in the world, and I'm just saying that it's right in your own sandbox.
Right in our own sandbox.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, so Lawrence, that topic is done. We got the idea across. Do you have anything to add about what happened in Texas recently with the shooting of the people with the Muhammad contest in cartoons?
I see that we are now being attacked on our homeland. But everything's under control because Barack Obama is in charge.
Well, we were attacked with a different president in charge that cost more than just a couple people wounded.
Oh,
we had 4,000
everyone
lives.
Does it. Everyone does it. There goes your excuse again, Floyd J.
Even before that, we had the killings in Oklahoma by the Americans.
Hiroshima! Yeah, let's go back there.
Lawrence, we're talking about terrorism.
Yes, I am. You diverted attention there, Floyd J.
Not at all.
My opinion.
Okay, Lawrence.
Well, Lawrence. He's making an interesting set of points. One of the issues we're going to talk about this morning is the $20 bill, which really involves an early terrorist who happened to have been formerly a president of the United States, a Southern Democrat. who basically made a habit of being called, began to be called the Indian killer, because he would wait for the braves to leave the village, and he would go in and slaughter the old people and the children. That was Andrew Jackson. And children in New Orleans at the time, discovering this, called for his face to be removed from the $20 bill. Now, there's an article that I'm going to be talking about that we'll be discussing regarding this issue and who should be on the $20 bill. Should Jackson's face be removed, or should some other face share the $20 bill? And that's kind of, should it be a woman? That's the other thing. And the other issues are, are we a tolerant society, or are we, is it an either or are we somewhere in between?
Well, that sure cleared that up for me. How about you, Floyd J?
Well, He wanted to talk about Andrew Jackson. During the Seminole Wars, Andrew Jackson would sit down to quell the uprisings that happened, and he is known as an Indian killer. And he became famous for it because at one time that was something that was positive. When we grew up, and I think Lawrence may be there and Augie was there, it was the cowboys against the Indians, the good guys versus
Lash
the bad guys.
Lash LaRue was my guy.
And it was just unfortunate.
Wait a minute. What was that you said, Lawrence?
I said my guy's name was Lash LaRue.
Oh, the cartoon?
No, he was not a cartoon.
Oh, I always thought he was, but that's
no.
And it was just unfortunate that the Indians were so often portrayed as the bad guys, and there was a lot of bad things to happen on both sides of the
issue.
Only
if they had a union, huh, Floyd J?
Yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah.
So
nothing like innuendo.
But what happened?
There was the tale of tears, the removal of the Indians from their lands that they were promised,
and as they were moved into different areas, unfortunately, they found gold in the Dakotas, and they were moved out again.
Well, without going through the whole history of the abuse of the Indians and the willingness to set them west of the Mississippi, and it was Jackson who really caused the Trail of Tears, among other things, which I would discuss about that, and the terrorism of this country visited upon other people, such as Hiroshima, the second bombing of the second city by Truman, that had to qualify a little bit in that area. So we've done the firebombing in Germany, we did in Hamburg, and we did it in
Dresden
and other places. The testing out to see if we could, with phosphorus bombs, if we could cause a firestorm, which we did, so much so that the asphalt melted in the streets and the gold and silver melted in the vaults of the banks, and people were leaping into the Atlantic and harbors and so forth to get away from the phosphorus stuck to their skin. And these were white German people during World War II. They were not armed military. So we've got, this is what happens in war, and now we have a big controversy about the drones and what they're doing and all of this and that. But so where do you come down in some of this stuff, Lawrence?
I see this as second tier conversation. I think there are more and current
What are those?
Well, you have your presidential election just starting to roar out of the gates. You have last week Osama bin Laden, 4 years since he was assassinated and killed. We have the Hillary going to Benghazi hearing. We have Hillary with the emails. We have her honesty and character and integrity being impugned. But we're talking about, and thank you for not censoring me, we're talking about things, a history lesson, and that's what I think is more pertinent.
So you like the idea of Hillary going on stage and debating Bernie Sanders, then?
I think that the Democratic Party nationally should and better have somebody that gives a cogent point of view and being able to represent their party, because Hillary, I think, is in deep problems with this email. I think the FBI should be involved and investigate her current situation.
No, isn't she going to go before two hearings?
Well, that's Benghazi, not the FBI, with all of her pay-to-play issues with Bill and herself. Why she was Secretary of State?
One of the hearings that she's required to attend has stated they're requiring that she bring she has to have? That she said
her emails that she's destroyed? Yeah, well, wouldn't you think that would kind of solve all the issues?
It might go to the questions a little bit more, so I think.
Right.
But I don't know if that's.
But don't you? Who besides Bernie Sanders do you think would be a reputable person representing the Democratic Party?
Jim Webb would be my choice.
Okay. Well, it doesn't seem like he's getting much.
He's already going around doing pretty much what the Republicans are doing. Finding out how much money he can pull together.
Good. Campaign. How about you, Floyd Jay, besides Jim Webb?
I would like to get a conversation topic and stay there, which would be nice.
Well, I think we this is conversational about the candidate.
I do like Bernie Sanders.
Like at the university, Floyd J.
Like Bernie Sanders because I like some of the platforms, and I'm kind of wondering why.
Socialism?
Well,
you mean like Social Security and Medicare?
Medicare, what Denmark has, what Sweden has, what Norway has.
Right. Oh, okay.
Which means they have Medicare, they have a higher standard of living, they have a higher health system, they have a better education system than we have. And that is what he's talking about. But he's also interested in things like tackling taxes. He does believe we should look at why companies are given tax breaks to ship American jobs overseas, or why some of the larger corporations will pay no taxes, or some of the biggest, most wealthiest people will pay a smaller tax rate than their secretaries and the average working person. I think that's an interesting issue just on taxes alone. How do you weigh in on that?
I would prioritize all of the issues, and I would put that point, which is a good one, maybe 10th.
Mm-hmm. Since priorities are what you're talking about,
That's what I said. I wasn't talking about it.
No, you said you'd put it.
I was responding to his question, August.
Well, I understood that. So what would your number one be, since you...
I think our threat to our country, our defense, our military...
You don't believe $1 trillion a year in defense spending through the CIA and the Pentagon is enough.
That's what I would put number one. Then I would put maybe the economy, maybe...
What's on the economy that's the problem? What is the problem with the economy?
Yes. August, I'm just giving you my list. Okay. Why don't you give me your list, August?
We appreciate that. Now, what we have, we've come up to the break, so we're going to take a break from one of our sponsors, and we'll be back on the Morning Edge, and...
We'll continue a little longer. Another call.
Hey!
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato. 4450 South Tamiami Trail, Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
Please support The Morning Edge on WWPR 1490 AM.
I'm co-host Floyd J. Winters, and I can build you a personalized and customized website at an affordable price. Advertise a small business, chronicle a wedding or share a collection of photos, post your own resume or the resume of your out-of-work brother-in-law. For details, visit BradentonWebsiteDesign.com. Oh, do a Google search on the keywords Bradenton Website Design and see which non-pay-for-click site comes up at the top of the page. Visit BradentonWebsiteDesign.com.
And we are back in the Morning Edge. We're going to finish up this one topic and go on to drugs in this short moment, and actually legalized drugs. But Augie, you want to say a couple things about your topic?
Well, just the issue of drugs, or do you want to continue with what we were on?
Well, I think we were just rehashing older things. We will talk about one thing. Lawrence mentioned the economy, and I would like to ask Lawrence a question. Could he list some of the economic indicators that show our economy is far worse than it was before our president took over? So,
where are we, Lawrence?
Yeah, as far as the stock market, as far as the housing market, as far as the job market, as far as the unemployment rate, which factors show that our economy has gone down into the heels, down the tubes since Obama's taken over?
I believe there are 93 unemployed Americans. 93 million unemployed Americans. That's more than when President Obama took office. There are more people on part-time where they have to work two jobs to get where they were with one job, and that is a fact, Jack.
You're right about that. It's been true for about 20 years, though.
Right. Everyone does it. But again, there's an answer to the question. Thank you for allowing me to give you a factual
absolutely.
Response.
Well, also a factual.
You're not wrong about that.
Right? Also a factual answer is that the unemployment rate was near 11.7% when Obama took over.
Currently, 93 million unemployed
Lawrence,
Americans.
I was listening to you. So the unemployment rate was about 11.5% when Obama took over. Right now it's about 5.5%. And I do admit that every president has been here, Democratic, Republican president, there's always the critics who will talk about the unemployed who have gone out of the market, that are no longer looking for work and therefore no longer counted as the unemployed. And what Lawrence is saying is true, whether it's Democrat or Republican.
We're not over-explaining what Lawrence is saying. I just recall in the early 1980s, when Ronald got up there and held up the list of jobs, that is, I think my voice is fading off the planet here right now. I don't see my voice showing up on the screen here. But in any event, he held a list of job availabilities, and most of these jobs were 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day, stuff like that, part-time work, all at below minimum wage, mostly for McDonald's, Burger King, and things like that. Not real jobs, not where manufacturing was involved, not where serious people could live off of the money they made, which they cannot do today because the corporations have crushed the unions, there's no representation of the worker, and the government is the last resort to maybe raise the minimum wage. Does that solve much? I don't know that the minimum wage raising solves much, but it helps. I think helping people and caring about people and corporations getting in between them and the vote and all the rest of the damage they have done and the complicity of the Republican Party, the job situation's a mess. Yeah, I agree.
Well, okay, anyway, the facts kind of vary. There is the number of how many people quit looking for work, which we've heard over and over again. But the one point that we will look at is the unemployment rate was in the 11s, 11.5. Right now, it's at 5.5, almost one half of what it was. But we're going to let that go. We want to thank Lawrence for his call. We're going to change
Thanks
our course.
Thanks for the conversation, Lawrence.
And it was much better. So thank you very much, Lawrence. And we'll talk to you later on. So you wanted to make a comment, and we'll kind of stay with this for a while, about drugs. I think we could talk about legalized drugs, and let's see if we can have a discussion on that. And so, Augie, what was the comments that you had on there?
Well, the drug treatment issue, a drug to treat abnormal heart rhythms can cost about $300 a day and more than $1,300 the next day. A diagnosis of multiple sclerosis can lead up to a drug bill of at least $30,000 a year. How companies set prices of specialty drugs for these and other complex diseases, like cancer and AIDS, has been a mystery to the patients who need them. Now the Obama administration and some states are tackling the lack of transparency and the rising costs. Mr. Obama has asked the Congress to let Medicare officials negotiate prices with drug manufacturers, a practice forbidden by current law, which may be hard to change, and with the anti-regulatory mood among Republicans. And the several states are considering bills that would require drug companies to justify their prices to public agencies. It is the least the states can do is to bring the costs to levels that patients and hospitals and government programs can afford. Spending on all prescription drugs, including commonly used medicines like antibiotics, accounts for one-tenth of the nation's total health spending. This drug
issue is such that it's out of hand. And then, so was that a caller?
The caller actually says that what I'm looking at right here isn't what he's hearing. So for the fun of it, there's something called a waveform that we look at when we do our radio show. And my waveform and Lawrence waveforms were up where they belong in August, way little bitty waveforms. But apparently it's still coming across nice and clear. So your caller says just ignore that and just keep on our show as we're going to. Here was an interesting situation. Our government, under the Bush administration, passed a rule saying that the pharmaceutical companies would no longer allow us to negotiate the price of prescription drugs. Canada could, but America was not allowed to negotiate those prices. We couldn't do what the VA did.
The question is, you know, they're against the Affordable Care Act, which has added about 20 million people who have coverage now, but they don't want people who have Medicare Part B, I think it is, or whatever.
Part B,
who gets cheaper medicine, prescriptions and so forth, to have the benefit. We just simply won't. This Congress digs in their heels. So who are they helping? Who are they in Congress to help? It's to help the drug companies and keep the moneyed interests where they are.
Well, there was an awful lot of campaign contributions that went to Congress. They're one of the biggest lobbyists in the nation. And as a consequence of that, they had a law passed that said we could not negotiate the price of pharmaceutical drugs. The VA could, and the VA had much less expensive drugs than what is happening otherwise under Medicare, Medicaid. What is an interesting player in here is CVS is coming in, and they want to start having clinics, CVS clinics, and Walmart's doing the same thing. And they feel they're a big enough chain that they can actually start on their own to negotiate the price of these drugs. Their clinics can...
Well, that's going to be interesting, Floyd. Do you think the Congress then is going to step in and block that?
Well, I think that's going to be a real big stepping on a competitive business's toes like that. I don't think they're going to be able to in this particular case. But here's an interesting player, both CVS and Walmart, but CVS is going into it. CVS quit selling cigarettes in their stores.
Yeah, they did.
And because they said, we're not going to be interested really as a health provider, and we're going to think about having these health clinics, these medical clinics, where we're going to have nurse practitioners and doctors who will be able to give prescriptions for not real serious ailments, but for the normal run-of-the-mill ailments that you may have. And as a consequence, we're going to send you not the most expensive drug, but the drugs that work. We're going to negotiate the price of these drugs. And that could actually have a big difference. It's amazing. Some people are thinking between how much they can eat or how much they can heat their house and how much you're going to spend on their drugs.
If you have multiple sclerosis and you need a drug for it, it's available in the United States. The list price, with a list price below $50,000 a year, this research say, which is 2 to 3 more times more than the prices in Canada or Australia or Britain. So we're clearly being screwed over. And it's the most of the drugs that Canada provides come out of China, come out of Indonesia, come out of
Ireland,
India, and these other, well, cheap, where they have the really cheap labor. Mm-hmm. India is one of the big producers. Mm-hmm. And so we're buying our drugs when we do get it at whatever massive price we have to pay. It's happening out of these low-priced areas. and the drug companies have it all made there, so they have that extra profit in the United States, where the milk cow keeps getting milked and built by the ilks of those who support corporations.
And very often, the government subsidizes some of the drug companies' research, and yet the government or the Americans get very little back for that subsidies.
Of the corporation.
It actually is socialism, the corporate.
You know, when Lawrence brought up the issue of socialism, I was with some friends one time watching a basketball game years ago. And they were complaining about all the people on welfare, how they're dragging things down. I said, well, let me see now. Do you have a mortgage? He said, well, yeah. I said, do you have a write-off on your tax and the interest you pay on your mortgage? Well, yeah. I said, isn't that the same thing? When you get a write-off, that's a subsidized non-payment of taxes on a portion of your money that deducts what you're paying. So if you got $30,000 a year in interest payments and your income was $100,000, you pay only on $70,000. You don't pay on the whole $100,000 because of the write-off. This is what write-offs do. You know, Neil called the other morning, and I apologized earlier, I think, but I should have, for pushing him on where his income was coming from. But Neil's an example of people on Social Security and other things because of their health and so on that some people have the gall to object to. You heard from Lawrence, no concern about $1 trillion of spending on the military, if we even know what it is, but just to spend more, that's somehow going to protect us against something like 9/11. The military did nothing to protect us against 9/11. And, you know, and when you're attacked, the military did not stop the Japanese from attacking you. So when you have a massive attack in Hawaii, there was no protection.
And back to our drugs, though.
Yeah.
Back to the
so
drugs.
All I'm saying is, so if the drug issue is one where your government gets between you and the drug supplier and doesn't protect the people, what good is the government? That is, if you can't have that protection in all these areas, then there's real question in the average minds of people who can't afford or can barely afford to survive. And the job issue and the level of pay and the jobs and the kind of jobs is the other issue. So this all goes, all meshes together. If you say, I'll give you your drugs for $10 a week, that's $40 a month, $500 a year, somebody making next to nothing finds that hard to pay for. How do we help that person? Do we just let them go on the street and go into drug dealing, as we do in Ferguson and in Baltimore, the poor people who end up get into the prison system? And they sell drugs, oxycodone and all these other things. So the whole thing gets short-circuited, and the poverty that people are pushed into because they can't simply afford for their own health care to pay for the prescription drugs that the doctor orders. I do not understand the logic of a population that would let its poor go down the tubes. If they will tell their Congress it's all right to block this, Floyd, then what good is the Congress? What good is the government?
Well, it's one of the few cases in American history that I can recall where the government said we cannot negotiate prices. Negotiation is just a hallmark of capitalism. It's a hallmark of a successful enterprise, and yet we're not allowed to negotiate that. So, again, the CVS entry into the idea of providing clinics and providing lower-priced drugs because they can negotiate directly with the pharmaceutical companies could be really an interesting thing that could have an impact.
You and I both are calling for social justice in this particular area. And social justice is the just treatment of people. We've got a whole raft of social justice issues right now with the Baltimore situation. Right now, the guy who smashed in the police car's window is being held without bond, or at least effectively by the bond being so $500,000. This guy has no money. He can't afford a $50,000 bond, so he's stuck in jail.
You're talking about in Baltimore now.
In Baltimore. So the justice of that, while the police officers, the six of them who were charged with the killing or taking part in the killing, in what form and under the excuse, well, he had a knife. Now it turns out, Floyd, the knife may not have met city code, so they're trying to say that was a just arrest. not an unjust arrest. That means three or four of the officers are going to go off the hook. And now you've got a situation where this just social justice issue is being winked at on the one hand and justified on the other. So the real question to me is, does society care about its poor? Does it care about its abused people who are humiliated this way all the time? The other question, I think we have a caller there for it.
It was the same caller we've had before.
Oh, this is
and he wants to talk about. I think we just lost him right there.
Let's, on the lighter note, on the $20 note, let's shift gears and talk about should Andrew Jackson come off the $20 bill. In 1928, the Treasury Department issued the first $20 bill featuring Andrew Jackson, replacing Grover Cleveland. After almost a century, Jackson needs to step aside, and this time the bill should feature John Ross, a Cherokee leader, and Old Hickory's opponents in the fight to control the Indian land.
I thought they wanted to have a female on there instead.
Well, there's a proposal for that. It was an era of nation building, and Jackson was a nation builder. Before becoming a politician, he was a soldier whose exploits changed the map of the United States. Alabama could not become a state until after he crushed the Creek Nation, which owned most of it. Florida belonged to Spain until after he invaded it. The trouble lies in how Jackson made the country we inherited. So he really made the United States in terms of much of the South. He coerced Native Indians into surrendering land through treaties, and in 1830, President Jackson, what did he do here? He signed Indian Removal Act, supporting a policy to push all natives west of the Mississippi. One result was the Trail of Tears in 1838, when 13,000 Cherokee left their homeland in the Appalachians. Another was a war against Florida's Seminoles. Gee, they named the football team after that, lasting nearly as long as the war in Iraq. The story is even worse than is generally known. Jackson and his friends obtained slices of Cherokee real estate for personal profit, golly gee whiz, and colonized the land with lucrative cotton plantations worked by slaves owned by Jackson. Determined to adapt to white civilization, Cherokees embraced white styles of clothing and agriculture, some including Ross, this Cherokee who was fought against a lot of these abuses. He fought against Jackson's army. There are a few saints in this tale. The ultimate adaptation came in 1828 when Ross was chosen as the principal chief under a new constitution modeled on that of the United States. Ross's government started a newspaper publishing exposés of the Cherokees' white antagonists. He worked with white allies, including women, and Cherokees even sued, asking the Supreme Court to recognize their right to govern their land. A ruling in their favor was ignored, but the Cherokees were more than mere victims. They enriched our democratic tradition. Ross wanted the Cherokee Nation to become a territory or state within the Union, which it did, in a way, generations later, as part of Oklahoma. So we have now some proposals. A $20 bill with Ross and Jackson would set a pattern for other bills. Each denomination should feature two different people who together left a story, illustrating our democratic experience. And Lincoln strained to save the Union during the Civil War. A portrait of Jackson hangs on his wall. Lincoln could share the $5 bill with Frederick Douglass, so you have two people there. And the escaped slave who prodded him to move faster to end slavery. Ulysses S. Grant should share, or could share, the $50 bill with my aunt, Harriet Beecher Stowe, whose anti-slavery novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, did as much to start the Civil War as Grant's armies did to end it. So we have these different faces. A woman, and I thought that even on the $20 bill, that Harriet Beecher Stowe might be someone to put on that, as maybe not on the 50, but on the 20. And anyway, we have women's rights, and do we want to elect a woman president? By golly, isn't that a dangerous thing? How many women really care about that fact. According to the polling, Hillary's got a pretty high number. She's got more. Romney got a high woman vote. I don't know what the percentage of votes are now for women supporting Hillary, but it's got to be pretty high. And then now with her statement on immigration, she wants a pathway to citizenship. She stated it flatly, and that's where she says she's going to push whatever she has to do should she become president. So if you where do you come down on that stuff? I mean, here we got the $20 bill, the recognition of women as part of the history, right when you do currency trading and so forth, all the time. You know, the issues are right there, aren't they? We're in your hand, in your wallet.
Well, what's happening right now is we have women, and it's been around for a long time. They tend to be some of the wealthiest people in America, sometimes through divorce, sometimes through inheritance, sometimes through their own hard work.
But can you imagine in the future, 50 years from now, say, oh, Hillary Clinton being the first woman to be elected president, she needs to be on the $100 bill.
Well, one of the changes that's happened for women is right now going to college, most of the students in the college, in most colleges, are female. It's a substantial majority of the population. They tend to do better in colleges. They tend to be better in schoolwork.
You know the ratio over here at the college you teach at?
I think it's like 55-45 or something like that. But the
55 what?
55% women or higher. So it's a higher percentage. They tend to do better in college. They tend to be better employees in many situations. And I absolutely believe in
taken care of by men sometimes.
I absolutely believe in the idea of the equal pay for women. But there's something happening right now, more than we've seen it, that it's the product of these women in school. As a consequence, they're going to get better jobs. They're going to actually end up making more money than men. Now, it's true that women will break up their careers by pregnancy, and as a consequence, that's going to... If you're in school, the longer you teach in a school, the more you'll get paid based upon your seniority. And many jobs have the seniority feature. So when you take out for the childbearing years, that's going to hurt. But when you add in the factor of education, I think we're going to start seeing this improvement of women's salaries. And hopefully we'll see the improvement of women more in Congress and a more sense of equality in the United States.
So you're talking about power.
And yes, I think female power is absolutely something that's on the rise right now. And it's seen in these other different undercurrents. We see some serious candidates, whether it's Sarah Palin or Hillary Clinton Elizabeth Dole that we had at one time.
Or Elizabeth Warren.
And we do see some very powerful females, but as far as running for the presidential office. But we're going to see it gradually happening, and it's going to be a surprising thing. Like we saw the build-up to gay rights, we see the build-up to legalize marijuana in a number of different states, and we're going to see this trend happening as more and more women have the higher educational degrees and have the better jobs.
After they lifted prohibition, it was happy days are here again. After FDR was elected, the same song came forward. What it is relief from the stress of people being crushed by the system. The unions came into play in the 30s. The Glass-Steagall Act came in, the separation between investment companies and the banks. The banks getting into investing caused the Great Depression and the Great Recession both. So leadership, when these things are at hand, is what we want, and we want the relief for the worker, for the benefit of the people generally.
Okay, sure.
So, we have a caller.
We have a caller, and welcome John from Sarasota.
Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning. Can you all hear me?
We do.
Yeah, and we've got about 3 minutes left. I just thought I'd chime in about women and some other things really quickly, just to round up the hour's conversation. My sister, who is now in her 60s, was told by my father when she was a teenager she could only be either a secretary or a nurse or a teacher. The Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg graduated from an Ivy League, and when she interviewed the big law firms in New York City, they were only offering her jobs as some kind of assistant or secretary or paralegal. So we've made a lot of progress in that respect. Comments about socialism and healthcare, etc. In Britain, there's going to be an election in a couple of days between the conservative David Cameron and the Labour Party. David Cameron would be considered a socialist in this country because of his totally intense universal support for his socialized medicine over there, for his government controlled the British healthcare system. Margaret Thatcher was totally in favor, endorsed the British healthcare system. So when we, when you hear mainstream journalists just kind of shrug off Bernie Sanders as a socialist or so-called socialist and all this, and they don't deal with the issues that he is bringing up that speak to middle-class families, the destruction of middle-class families, the flatlining of wages, how college graduates are now graduating with $25,000 to $30,000 in debt. And when all three of us were coming up, you could work a summer and pay for college. Just thought I'd throw that in.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right.
You did a great job there, John.
I think John's points and the college thing and the fact that most debts can be dealt with through the right of bankruptcy, but college students are denied that right. Why would that? What are your opinions on that one, John? Why is that?
Well, again, look at what our government does now. 2 weeks ago, the Republican House of Senate passed a $260 billion 10-year tax cut for the top two-tenths of 1%. 5,000 to 6,000 families, $260,000 on quote unquote the death tax or the inheritance tax. Think what that money could do for college scholarships.
You don't believe that that money is going to be filtered down, trickled down to the ordinary people. You don't really believe that.
No. Again. One final thing, Nick Kristof recently wrote this column about the Social Progress Index, sponsored by Michael Porter out of the Harvard Business School.
Right.
Focus your next conversation on that. Okay, who are the best countries taking care of their people in the world? The Scandinavian countries. And this is by the Harvard Business School.
And they are branded as being socialist, but they have a very high state of living, they have a very good health care system, they have a very low birth-death rate.
And they have regular elections.
And they do. And they have better turnout.
And their elections are...
Well, we have to... Thank you very much. And, okay. Let's... We got a chance for 30 seconds. Another caller real quick, please.
Hey, John, move.
Yeah, that would be... Go back to where you came from.
Yeah. Okay, well, we want to thank you very much for listening to this segment of The Morning Edge. We will see you back here on Friday.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.